Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hi everybody, and welcome to a special bonus episode of Wild Wild Podcast. So for this episode, I'd managed to get an interview with Luigi Cozzi, and this has been, well, long-term listeners will know that I asked Luigi about this back in June last year, but then I was waiting until we did our Luigi Cozzi season, and then that dragged on quite a lot because, well, it just did. So finally started emailing Luigi, and we came down to doing it. So today, I had it all ready to go. Time starting 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock in Rome. I'm doing this at work, and I'd had to find an empty room and set up a webcam and a microphone. I'd got it all set up, got everything ready, and then for whatever reason, Luigi didn't turn up. So I waited about 15 minutes. I emailed him, and eventually I waited and thought, oh, maybe, you know, something's happened and I'll arrange it for another day. So I put all the equipment away, left this little room, went back to my office, which is a shared office, which is why I couldn't do it there. And the first thing that popped up on my email was, Profondo Rosso Store has entered your Zoom room. I'm like, oh no. So I had to quickly run back, find the webcam, find the microphone, find the headphones that I just put away, plug it all back in this little room, and log in. And so it was a bit of a messy start. So Luigi was then waiting for me, which is funny. So anyway, so that's why you're here at the beginning of the interview. I don't do a proper welcome. I just kind of dive straight in because I'm aware of time and everything like that. But he was very generous with his time. He's very funny and gave lots of great answers. The sound quality is not fabulous because he's just on his laptop in the store. I will include some clips. There's at least one or two video clips that I'll take from the recording and put on our social media feeds if you want to see. But yeah, he's just on his laptop, you know, just with his built-in microphone. So the sound quality isn't great, but hopefully it's good enough that you can listen and enjoy the stories that Luigi has about his time working in the Italian film industry and the fact that he's still making films and still planning to make films as well. So do enjoy this bonus episode as a sort of culmination of our Luigi Cozzi season as I take some time to talk with the maestro live in his Profondo Rosso store. Well, this is very exciting. Thank you so much for doing this. How are you?
Fine.
Good, good. How are things at the store? I wanted to ask you about the Profondo Rosso store because you've been running that now for many years.
Yeah, it's 33 years.
Wow.
Quite a long time.
And do you get people like me coming in all the time to see you and talk to you about your films?
Yeah, quite often, quite often.
That must be really nice that you have fans who come to visit.
Yeah, I love meeting fans.
Yeah. Well, there are not many directors who sit and wait every day for people to come. It's like there it would be great if all film directors had shops.
Well, but first I am a fan. I've always been a fan.
Yes.
And then I've been a director.
That's true. Yes, so you started, you were always very interested in science fiction.
Yeah.
And you wrote Science Fiction magazine.
Yeah, I edited them, translated books from English, and still work in science fiction.
We are big fans of your films on the podcast, so I wanted to ask you some questions. First of all, the Killer Must Kill Again, your Giallo film. Did you ever want to make more Giallo films after that?
Well, I always wanted to do only science fiction movies, as a
Okay.
matter of fact. But people in Italy didn't care about the science fiction, producers didn't care about sci-fi. So I started working with Giallo, which was the closest thing to sci-fi for, in my opinion.
Yeah. I really love The Killer Must Kill Again, or the Il Ragno. It's such a good film.
Yeah, I have been working with Dario Argento, you know, writing for Fries on Green Velvet. And when I was offered the possibility of making a picture by myself, I decided to do something different from Dario's. So that one key element in Dario's movies was the fact that you knew the identity of the killer only in the last scene. And so I decided to reverse that. And I did show on full screen the face of the killer in the first shot of the picture and worked on from that.
Yeah, it's brilliant. It's so good. I was very impressed with it. I hope that we get a Blu-ray, a restoration, something like that.
People wanted to do it on Blu-ray in England and in the USA, but where the negative was stored, it was it disappeared.
Oh.
So we don't know where it ended, and we are still trying to get it because there are Blu-ray companies who want to publish it.
Wow. Maybe they'll find it like they did the Black Cat, which was missing for a long time.
Yeah, it was also the Black Cat was a different story, but a complicated story too, you
Yeah,
know.
it very often is complicated.
Yeah.
So you love science fiction, and obviously we are big fans of Star Crash.
Oh, yeah.
But we use a version of the Star Crash theme as our podcast theme. That my son made a cover version of it for us, and we love Star Crash. And then you did shortly after Star Crash, obviously you did Contamination, another science fiction film. But was the problem, like you said, producers weren't interested in science fiction. So even after Star Crash and Contamination, was there still not much interest in science fiction?
But you know, Star Crash was made with American company.
Ah, okay.
The Italian producer were not interested. Even afterwards, Star Wars, they were not interested. Contamination was made with an Italian company because of the fact that Star Crusher made a lot of money in Italy too, and Alien was making a lot of money too, and so the producer decided to take a risk, but he wanted to me to do a James Bond-like movie
Right.
instead of the pure science fiction movie, you know. So he had to compromise.
Yeah. Well, it worked. It was good.
I went back to my inspiration, went back to the 50s movies, the British Quatermass 2, you know, and pictures like that, and it worked.
Now you're sometimes credited as being one of the directors, or that you worked on The Humanoid. What was your involvement with that film?
No, I was not involved at all. It
Oh.
the Humanoid production company first hired some special effects from America or from England. I don't know. They came here, and after some months of work, they didn't do anything,
Oh.
which pleased the producer. So the producer was in big problem, difficulty, and American International Pictures, Sam Harcourt, who was partnering on the Humanoid, said, "Why don't you get the same people who did the effects for Star Crash? They are Italians." So they went and hired my crew, and
Okay.
not me, not me.
Right. Okay. Yeah. But your footage from Star Crash was used in a film which is known as Star Crash 2 or Escape from Galaxy 3. Did you ever see that film?
That was made by the executive producer of Star Crash.
Right.
He was convinced that using the same shots, space shot, the same shot, he could do a similar movie. And but I told him, we were friends, but I told him, "You are crazy. If you don't do more effects in the way I did them, you will face a disaster." And as a matter of fact, they faced a disaster. You know, the picture was released and was a total flop. So they shot other material, sexy material, hard things, and put it on the red light cinema theater.
Oh,
And it
right.
was a disaster even there. So it was a total failure, and after that, the executive producer came to me and said, "You were right. I should have listened to you."
What did you think of it? Did you mind them using your footage?
I was not in control of it, you know. I didn't see it. I didn't care about it.
Okay.
I just told them that they were going to face a disaster, and they did.
The American woman who stars in that film, Sherry Buchanan, I tracked her down recently. She lives in Rome now.
She was, I think she was one of the Amazon in my picture in Star Crash.
Oh, right.
I think she was on one of the Amazon
Okay.
girls.
Yeah, it's a very funny film, but it is, yeah, you're right, it is a disaster. I want to talk about Hercules. And Hercules and Hercules 2. What was Lou Ferrigno like to work with? He seems like he was having a good time.
He did have a good time. He was quite filled with enthusiasm. Actually, it was him who decided to do Hercules.
Right.
Canon offered him a contract for two movies, and he accepted in providing that one of the two was Hercules, because as a kid, he loved Steve Reeves in the first Italian Hercules, and he wanted to show himself our Hercules too.
And you managed to make the films quite science fiction, like fantasy and science fiction.
Of course,
Yeah.
because you know, Canon hired me because I made Star Crash, which made a lot of money in the USA, and so they expected me to do something like that, but it was my own decision to do a science fantasy Hercules, you know.
Well, it works very well. It ties in with a little bit with the Superman films, I think.
Yeah, it's I was sure that a picture like that worked well with American audience. It did a small fortune in the USA.
Yeah, that's good. And then you were called on to rescue the Sinbad film that Canon were doing a couple of years later.
Yeah, in the beginning I was supposed to do Sinbad. I wrote a screen treatment which was approved, and then they asked me to write the screenplay. I wrote the screenplay, and I was supposed to direct the movie. But then Canon changed their plans, moved the project ahead, and I had to find another work.
Right.
And I did. And when they were ready to do it again, I was busy. And also they partnered with some Italian producer who didn't know me and didn't like me, and they decided to do it in different as a vehicle for TV.
Right.
Any of them knew that Harryhausen and Sinbad had made millions. They were ignorant. My Sinbad screenplay was exactly in the Harryhausen vein, with a lot of stop motion, with a lot of effects. And when they had this script, they decided to take away all the effects and do it old-fashioned, just with fights, which nobody cares in the audience. That's my opinion. That was my
Yeah.
opinion, and that was happening. But not even the audience did not like that. The producers, Goran and Grobus, when they saw the picture, they hated it and shelved it and decided not to release it for 2 years.
Right. So then, you came in and you directed some of that film in the end, or have I got that wrong?
Well, what happened is was the picture was still lying on the shelves, almost forgotten. Then I happened to meet her casually, occasionally, just Goran and the chief of Italian Canon. And when they saw me, one of the two said, "Hey, listen, Luigi, but if we propose you to work again on Sinbad, would you do it?" I said, "But you already made it." And they said, Yes, but we hated it. Are you ready to re-edit it and doing a lot of special effects in it?" And so I said, "Okay, let me show you. Let me show the what's the movie, and then I'll tell you what I think about it." And I said, it was more than 4 hours long
Wow.
because it was made for TV.
Right. Oh, yes. Yeah.
And I said, as a series, it's impossible to do something with it, in my opinion. But if you accept to get it as just a feature, 80-minute features, I think I can adjust it in a way, not totally, but in a way. And they said, yes, okay, that would be okay for us. And we made the deal, and I was put to work on that.
The final version of the film, are you happy with how it turned out?
The director of cut has been destroyed.
Right. Oh.
Been destroyed and not kept because they hated it.
Right.
So I shrank it.
Yeah.
I edited it in a completely different way and had to put some voice over the beginning with the book, doing the startup or the whole thing,
Right.
and adding special effects where I could insert them on the material which has been shot without thinking to put on need a special effect.
Yeah.
So it was not an easy job, you know.
No, but you seem to specialize in coming in and fixing problems. You're very good at that.
Yeah, but because I always been living in the cinema, you know. First, I was watch when I was since I was young. I even went 2, 3 times a day in a theater. I was
Nice.
mad about movies, you know. So I think I got enough experience as a spectator to know what may be good or may be wrong in a picture.
And do you still go to the movies?
Nowadays, no. Nowadays, I think most of the movies made today are not movies like I mean them. They are products, which is a totally different thing. I don't even know the name or the big directors, you know. You, except for 3 or 4, you don't know anyone of them. They are not allowed to show their personality on the screen. These are movies made by the producers.
Right. And what about Italian cinema today? Is there an Italian cinema now?
No, it doesn't exist anymore. In Italy, it's almost impossible to do a movie without getting the finance from Italian TV.
Right.
And Italian TV is interested only in Italian production, which is local, because they need local movies.
Right.
The big ones, the big action movies, the bigger comedies, other things like that, they do buy them from USA, from French, from other countries.
Did you see the new Diabolik film? I quite liked that.
Yes, but I never been a fan of Diabolik, even as a comic, you know. So I didn't care about it.
Fair enough.
I only like the Mario Bava picture because it was a crazy movie.
Oh yeah.
Very different from Diabolik comics.
That's true. Yeah, it's fabulous. So speaking of modern film, your film Blood on Melies Moon has just come out on Blu-ray in America. You mentioned on that disc that you first wanted to make this film with Canon, like back in the 80s. So how would it have been different to the final version?
Oh, it was very different because what I wanted to do with Canon was Blood on Melies Moon, but it was set in the very years that Melies shot this movie. So I wanted to do a kind of period picture with Melies getting the inspiration for his moon people by the a strange creature which materialized from another dimension on the sets, you know, and that was quite a different. But when I decided to do it with my money, you know, I knew I couldn't do a period picture because it would have cost too much, so I changed the story.
And you put yourself in the film, and you're very funny.
It depends on the way I shot it, because I decide not to shoot it every day. You know, when you do a picture, you say 6 weeks of work altogether. I decided not to do that. I decide we shoot 2 days here in this place. Then 3 months afterward, we shot another day in another place. And so I took about 2 years to do the
Wow.
movie. And obviously I knew I couldn't get an actor at my disposal for 2 years. So I decide I'll do it myself.
Oh, it's very funny. I like your bow tie you're wearing that you wear. It's a good look.
I try to get fun of me.
Yeah. But you have made more recently your film I haven't seen, La Battaglia di Roma.
Yeah, that's a it's
That's
a
a
doc
period is that
docufiction.
so is that a period film? Did you have more of a budget for that one?
It actually it is an historical movie which tells what happened in 2 centuries ago in because Rome was the first city which created a constitution, which is the basis of the Italian constitution of today. And I did work it, actually all is historical, mixing special effects, animation, stop motion, every kind of special effects, plus short pieces in period costumes.
Yeah.
So it's a very experimental movie in the way Hercules 2 was experimental too, because I like to experiment.
Yeah. And is there any chance that we will get to see that film? Do you think it will get some kind of a release that we could see?
I don't know. I don't know. I because it's an episode of Italian history, you know.
Right.
So, it's very difficult that abroad,
Yeah, that's
some
true.
company may be interested into showing it, even if it's a good movie. There is a lot of action in it,
Right.
but it's very difficult. It's like I wrote Dario Argento's 5 Days, which is another historical episode of the same period, because the period which I'm talking about started with the revolution in Milan, which is told in the 5 Days by Dario Argento, and ended with the siege of Rome some months later,
Okay.
which is the story I tell in this Battle of Rome.
Right. So it's like a sequel.
Yeah,
Okay.
it's a historical sequel.
Right. And it could people buy a copy in Profondo Rosso? Do you have the film there?
I'm trying to do with a Blu-ray company here in Italy
Okay.
a special Blu-ray or DVD edition of 5 Milan of 5 Days, Dario Argento 5 Days, plus my
Oh, okay.
docufiction, two movies
Yeah. Oh, that's a
on a single box.
great idea. Also, just well, we're coming to an end, I think, but on the IMDb, it says that you're making a new version of your Dario Argento documentary called Il Museo degli Orrori di Dario Argento.
Yeah, I've already made it.
Right. Okay. So is that a documentary about Profondo Rosso, the store, and the museum?
Yeah, in the museum, and it shows behind the scenes
Okay.
of Dario Argento movies which are inside the museum.
Right. I love the museum. I've been down there, I think, 3 times. It's really fun, and that was what I enjoyed seeing the museum in Blood on Melies' Moon. You have scenes down there as well. Is it was it a wine cellar or something? It seems very old down there.
Yes, very old. This building was built in the 20s of the last century,
Right.
and where the store is now with these dungeons, actually was a store which sold coal.
Okay.
Coal in that time they did use coal to heat the houses and apartments, you know.
Right.
And so the every cell of the museum was actually a cell filled with coal.
Okay.
Came and bought it and brought it away.
Wow. It's very atmospheric down there. It's really great. I recommend if anyone is ever coming to Rome, they have to visit. Could I just ask you finally about your friendship? So we've obviously everyone knows about your friendship with Dario Argento, but you were also friends with many other Italian directors as well. And one of my favorites is Antonio Margheriti. And did you know him well?
Yeah. I was very, very friendly with him. You know, I knew him in the mid of the 60s.
Oh, wow.
When I was a journalist and I wanted to interview him. And when I came to Rome, I went back to him. And he asked me to write something, some story for his, because he wanted, at about the year 70, just the 70, he was going to do a picture with Dean Jones, the Walt Disney, the love bug,
yes,
main character.
Uh-huh.
And he hoped to turn it into a big hit and to be able to produce movies. He wanted to start a kind of fantasy factory.
Right.
So to me, he asked to write him a story. I did write him a story. He liked it and was willing to do it soon after this he finished shooting the Dean Jones movie, you know. But
right.
What happened was that the Dean Jones movie was a disaster at the box office.
There's Mr. Super Invisible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a total disaster.
Mm.
And he had a lot of problems, money problems. He told me, I met him just 1 month before he died again. And he told me he had just finished paying back his debts. And he died in 2000s.
Yeah, that's a shame.
Yeah.
But he was a very important director for Italian science fiction.
Yeah. He did start the big venture with the spaceman.
Yeah.
That was a very daring move for his time. He loved that kind of thing. He was very good at working with models and miniatures.
Yeah, it was fabulous. Can I ask you, thank you so much for doing this. Can I ask you finally, are you making any more films now? Do you have something that you're planning to do next?
Well, I was willing to do it. After Blood on Manus Moon, I've done The Little Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
That was not an original idea by mine. They offered me to do a movie in a school.
Right.
With children. And so I had to find out something which could fit that proposal. And I did that one. And after that, I done The Battle of Rome. And after that, COVID came.
Mm.
So everything was blocked for a couple of years.
Yeah.
And I would like to do something, but it's very difficult to be original.
Yes.
I always want to change, not to repeat myself.
Mm.
If you see my filmography, you see that I've done a lot of genres.
Yeah.
In my way, our way, but a lot of genres. And now I'm finding it difficult to find something which I have not done before, you know.
Mm.
I could do a Western, but a Western now don't make sense to make a Western, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm looking for a right idea. I have a few ideas, but they haven't grown enough
Yeah.
from a story to convince me to work into it. So I don't know.
Well, I'm sure whatever it turns out to be, it will be something that will be worth us, be worth watching, something we can look forward to, whatever it is.
I thank you for this word, but this is what I want to do every time I start working on a movie, to do
Yeah.
something different from what has been done before in that kind of movie.
Yeah. Well, good luck.
Okay, thank you.
Well, thank you so much for agreeing to do this interview. And if anyone's listening who hasn't been to Rome, you must go to Rome and go and visit Profondo Rosso. It's like a pilgrimage. Everyone has to go, and you can buy books and DVDs and Blu-rays and T-shirts. You can meet Luigi. You can go downstairs into the museum. It's a must visit.
Okay, I wait
Okay.
for you all.
Yeah. Well, grazie mille, Luigi.
Grazie a voi, grazie a voi.
Thanks again to Luigi Cozzi. I'm so grateful that he took the time to talk to me, and I hope you were all able to enjoy that and hear what was going on. Okay, there were a couple of times during the conversation where he had to go and help customers, or the phone started ringing at one point, but it was really great to talk to Luigi. After we'd had that conversation, he sent me a couple of emails, which I just wanted to read to you, which just reinforced to me how he's the nicest man alive. So I'd sent him some questions, which, and then he emailed me with answers to a couple of them that we didn't get to in the interview. He mentions that there is a DVD and Blu-ray with both of his Hercules films and his re-edited version of Castellari's Sinbad. It would be really fascinating, wouldn't it, to be able to watch the 4-hour version of that? But he said that's lost. So anyway, he also emailed me to say the best cinematographer that he's ever worked with is Pasquale Rocchini, who did Black Cat in 1989, and the Argento TV series Turno di Notte, or Night Shift, in 1987. I replied, of course, and I said that I was grateful for that. And I'd meant to ask him in the interview, what did he think really happened to Louis Le Prince, who mysteriously disappeared, and is credited with being the inventor of film, basically. And this is part of his story in Blood on Melies Moon. So he replied to say, I read an article a few years ago on an Italian leading newspaper about the Le Prince mystery. If you look up his name on Google now, you'll find other articles about this man, his invention, his mysterious disappearance, and the murder of his own son. It seems that Le Prince, after leaving to go to Paris, where he never arrived, had already booked a ship to New York in order to prove in the New York Tribunal that his invention had been patented before Thomas Edison had patented his own similar camera projector. This meant that Edison had no right to claim a percentage on every movie made in America. So it was $1 million worth trial. There are strong suspicions that Edison did not want Le Prince to reach New York. Years later, Le Prince's son went to New York investigating about the death of his father, and in his last letter to his mother, he wrote he was soon going to get the final truth about the murder of his father, but a few days later he was found dead, killed by a gunshot. His murderer has never been found. So Edison could go on earning millions of dollars, and the Lumiere brothers were considered the inventors of cinema, while the incredible story of Le Prince had almost been totally forgotten. Which, that would make for a pretty great story, wouldn't it, in a film? Maybe Luigi's next movie could tackle that one. Anyway, so I just wanted to mention that as a postscript to the interview, that he did contact me and we had a brief conversation. But again, thank you so much to Luigi Cozzi, Lewis Coates, for taking the time to talk to the Wild Wild podcast, and thank you for listening. We'll be back with a next episode in our post-apocalypse season soon. If you want to contact us, all our contact details are in the show notes. We're on Twitter, we're on email, all that stuff, Instagram as well. But anyway, Right, I've been Adrian. Thank you for listening.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us.
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.